Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Happy New Year. This is the first show of the brand new year, 2020. We are coming out of the gates swinging. My question is, did you miss us? We missed you, that's for sure. Got a lot of things taken care of in the background. Folks, 2020 is going to be a tremendous year. Now, your definition of tremendous and mine and others might differ, but it's going to be a year to remember. That's for sure, a turning point year. Of course, 300 and some odd days till the election. That's right. So many things in the news. Of course, the news while we were away, the Iranian situation has heated up. You know about that, of course. Soleimani is taking a dirt nap, compliments of, well, at the moment, do we know? Do we really know? It's apparently a surgical strike by the United States against Soleimani. And make no mistake about it. If you understand the history of this guy, you'll understand the fact that he needed to be taken out, period, end of story. Now, I'm not big on foreign entanglements, and I understand the entirety of I understand the fact that, boy, this could really inflame tensions across the Middle East, but this was a defensive, this was an action or a reaction to an action, a response to an action, just so people understand that. And one of the things I found very interesting, just briefly, is the fact that President Trump said, look, we didn't do this to start a war. We did this to prevent a war. Take that in the context of what President Trump has, who he has around him, you know, the PNAC promoting a lot of the globalist World War III loving individuals. Again, those who have infiltrated into the executive branch, current executive branch, as well as those in power in Congress, even though there are public servants, they serve us. They're serving their best interests in war. So we have to take a look at that domestically. What's going on domestically? Well, you've got a number of things. Virginia. Oh, do I just say Virginia? There are three pieces of legislation you have to know about that intend to be enacted here in January of 2020. I've got some things on this, even over the last 24 hours. I've got a few people whispering in my ear about certain things about Virginia I think you'll find very interesting. I'll break that information out in a number of different ways, including but not limited to this channel, HagmanReportLive.com. That's where you find all of the program descriptions, the guest bios, the links, the show notes. That's HagmanReportLive.com. And also HagmanReport.com. Now, although we're streaming on YouTube, but we're also autonomous as well. That tested throughout the Christmas break. And I've got to say that we are 5x5 and strong on the autonomous network. So in other words, we don't need YouTube. We don't need that free public platform. But I have a favor to ask you, a couple of favors. If you are watching this, I ask that you subscribe to the YouTube feed. That's right. It seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? But subscribe to it. We can play. If we're going to exist in their sandbox for as long as we can, we certainly can capitalize on the algorithms. So subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's real simple. Just, it's the official Hagman Report on YouTube. You can search it. But, so do that. Also subscribe to or follow or like or whatever you do, whatever the terminology might be, to the social media platforms that still exist for us, both on Twitter and Facebook. Again, it seems counterintuitive if we're moving away from that, but we have to capitalize on certain things. And when I say capitalize, I'm talking about capitalizing in the fight, not monetarily, but in the fight that we find ourselves, in which we find ourselves. And lastly, before I bring John Moore on, I've got a couple of announcements about that too. But lastly, before I bring him on, I just want to mention the Golden Globes happened last night. Now, we had a Patreon meeting last night. I want to thank all of those people who support us by way of Patreon, by PayPal, by mail. Thank you so very much. During some of the downtime, I was able to really, really go through, read some of the mail. My goodness. Thank you. Just thank you. But thank you for your support, because without your support, even because of the occasional sponsors that we might have, it's you that are keeping this platform alive. And it's you that depend or that put your trust in us. And I will not squander that trust. Let me tell you something. I've gone through numerous videos, numerous channels, numerous articles, numerous sources over the last couple of weeks. And just to see some of the stuff that's on the internet, see some of the channels, what they are promoting, some of this incredibly ignorant information that is just not true. Okay. I don't want to say fake news because that's not what it is. It's deception. People who are deceived, parroting their deception to others. And yet people blindly follow them. It blows my mind. Which is somewhat related to this Golden Globes from last night. Ricky Gervais came out swinging. In fact, on Hagman Report Twitter, there's a 7-minute, 49-second monologue. Now, you might say, well, who cares about Golden Globes? And I don't care. I don't watch it. But, you know, others do. And what Ricky Gervais did was he outed in a very flagrant manner all of the Hollyweird individuals. It's worth 7 minutes and 49 seconds of your time to watch and listen. But even more importantly, watch the reactions from people like Tom Hanks. That's a meme now on Twitter, I guess. Watch it. It's worth every minute. Yes, the exposure, worth every minute. Incredible. Look, folks, the holidays are over. Now that the holidays are over, it's a brand new year. You know, we have to get down to business, don't we? If you are thinking about the high interest rate credit cards you've used over the holidays and the bills that are going to be coming, I've got an idea to ease your mind. I'd like you to take advantage of this. You can pay off your credit card balances. You know, the ones that you used for Uncle Ed's Christmas gift and whatever it might be, right? You can pay off the credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. You can roll multiple credit card payments into just one payment, a lower fixed rate. Oh, LightStream's credit card consolidation loans have rates as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay. It's a lot lower than the national average rate. It's over 20%. Look at your cards. Look, go get your statements right now. After the show, get your statements. Look at the rate of interest you're paying on some of your cards. And this will just make sense. 5.95% APR with auto pay. The application process, by the way, is so quick and easy. You can apply right from your phone. Folks, just for my listeners, apply now and get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm going to spell this out for you. It is lightstream.com/Hagman. One more time, lightstream.com/Hagman. Now, this is subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. It just makes sense. Just makes sense. All right. So again, we've got international issues. We've got, domestic issues. You've got chaos throughout the land, I suspect. And perhaps your question is, in our absence, in my absence, is where do I look? What's most important? How do I evaluate? What's most important here in terms of following? Where should I kind of focus my attention? Because we only have 24 hours in a day, you and me. And most importantly is, who should we listen to? When I say that, I'm talking about, given the fact that we only have 24 hours a day, you and me, we can't listen to every single broadcast of every single podcaster, news analyst. So you've got to kind of make some decisions. In this 2020, I can think of no better way to have two investigators with over 65 years of combined experience, two detectives, 65 plus years of combined experience, just chatting away, bringing you on board, talking about current events, things that will affect you, could affect you, and giving a investigative triage of the news. So with me is the Liberty Man. That's John Moore. He's going to be joining me for the full 2-hour show every Monday. But you know, I'm so excited about this, because who I listen to? I listen to John Moore, because he has the best information, in my view, the best sourced information, and the best information through his broadcast. Go to thelibertyman.com. Make sure you get that right. It's going to be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. And, hey, learn up, get educated, get informed through John Moore. John, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing outstanding, Doug. How are you, sir?
Very well. Thank you. You know, it's kind of hard to believe. 60, really, I think between you and I, over 65 years of detective investigative experience, you with the military, exemplary record. Wow, I'm impressed.
Well, it's probably quite a bit more. I have 47 years going back to 1973.
Right.
So when you add yours on top of that, I think we're well past 60, Doug.
Yeah, I think, closer to 70, perhaps. I don't know. But the bottom line is, man, you know, I listen to you and I hear what you're talking about and who you're talking with. And, I feel good. I feel like your information is rock solid, and I don't have to double and triple check to see if this is kind of if what you're saying is just BS, because it's not.
Well, thank you, Doug. My original major in college in 1966 was to be a journalism major. Now here I find myself more than half a century later a broadcast journalist, and any story that's of any consequence, I always exercise journalistic expertise and make sure I've got at least two independent sources before I go public with something to verify that something is what it claims to
be. Yep. That and your investigative nose too is, I've seen work very well. And so all of that combined to the listeners and viewers of the Hagman Report, and of course the Liberty Man, your daily show. So I'm just so excited that we have this camaraderie, this partnership, if you will. So having said that, where are you focused now, coming out of, this holiday? I'll get it right. Holiday.
Period. Holidays are very disruptive to a lot of things, but they're necessary for people to get together with their families. Two things, Middle East and Virginia are the top of my list. The Virginia legislature, I believe, is coming Wednesday, which would be, let's see, is that the 8th? I believe they will vote the 8th on some gun bills. And then 2 weeks from today is the annual rally. It's a possibility. My guest this morning, Sam Andrews, he believes it could be the largest pro-gun rally in the history of the country. It may very well be. We're praying for a safe and nonviolent situation 2 weeks from today. It would be a great opportunity for George Soros to send his paid and trained protesters there to incite violence, the Antifa people. Hopefully that won't happen, but there's a high likelihood that it would. The Middle East, yep. Of course, my first-hand experience with the Middle East goes back to the 6th Special Forces Group at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, 1969-1970, when I worked in an intelligence section on the Middle East. I prepared reports, intelligence briefings that ended up in the Pentagon and the CIA headquarters. So I've been familiar with what goes on in the Middle East for a long time, the true nature of the threats in the Middle East. I believe President Trump is finally getting good advice to somehow, some way, extricate us from the Middle East. That needs to happen. We no longer need their oil. They can just keep their oil and sell it to anybody they want. We're a net oil exporting country. And that was a pretext for us being there, beginning with the Nixon administration. We don't need them. We don't need their oil. We don't need them. Let them do what they do there, and we can go on about our business. The extrication process is going to take a while. I can't say how long, but we need to get out of there and let those people be. That's what needs to happen, Doug. We hear a lot about the drone attack on this Iranian general last week. The Democrats are concerned that it will start World War III. The president is saying, no, this is meant to stop the war. We shall see. We won't have too long to wait. Hezbollah does, in fact, have terrorist cells in this country. That's pretty well established.
Right.
If they get the green light to do violent acts, they'll probably do that. And we will have to deal with that. Islam is not compatible with Western civilization. It simply is not. The basic foundational tenets of Islam are not compatible with Western civilization, let alone Christianity.
Not at all. And John, I think people need to really understand that. Look, if you are a non-practicing Muslim, I mean, if you are an Islamic or an adherent to Islam and you're practicing Islam, or you recognize that as your guide like Christians do, okay, there's no way that your Islamic religion, it's not a religion, it's a political system wrapped in the illusion of a religion. Am I right on this?
Precisely.
Okay. So it's antithetical to anything constitutional. You can't have Sharia and constitutional law. You cannot have adherence to the Quran and coexistence with the Constitution at the same time. Simple as that.
No, not at all.
Okay.
The basic tenets, the foundational basic tenets of what these people believe, they cannot deviate from or incompatible with Western civilization. Marrying your first cousin, being a polygamist, murdering your teenage daughter if she dates a boy without your permission, female genital mutilation, not adhering to basic modern hygiene habits such as washing your hands with hot, soapy water. They don't do that. A practicing Muslim may have never touched a bar of soap in their life. Their beliefs, their lifestyle, their practices are not compatible with Western civilization. End of story. And that can't change. And it won't change.
I want to tell you this, and when we talked off air, I don't think I had gotten this email yet. When you had talked about the matters of hygiene, for example, last week or the last time you were on, I got an email saying that's not right. You know, we were called some names and
a lot of the call, when you can't attack the message, you attack the messenger.
Right. But I responded back.
My information comes from firsthand knowledge.
Exactly.
My friend who was a contractor who built million-dollar homes in Metro Chicago for several Muslims, who went over the blueprints with the architect, the first set of blueprints. Oh, Mr. Architect, you made a mistake. None of the 5 bedrooms in this million-dollar home, have any toilet paper holders. And the architect said, no, that's not a mistake. They don't use toilet paper. They use their left hand and no soap when they're done. Now, how disgusting is that?
And the emailer, by the way, apologized after going through and looking at the base tenets of Islam to say, hey, sorry, I was wrong. I didn't believe you and I was wrong. So anyway, go ahead.
I live fairly close to the most prestigious engineering university on the planet, the University of Missouri Science and Technology, Rolla, Missouri. The president of the university, by the way, in that campus is a Muslim. I talk to young men who are students there. Almost all the students are men, maybe 10% female. And they say, John, if there's a Muslim in our class, we sit as far away, physically, as far away from the Muslim student as we can. I say, why is that? And so, well, it's real simple. They stink. They never use soap in their life. They've never touched a bar of soap in their life. Now, if they can afford it, they use very expensive perfume or cologne, which is just about as bad in terms of being around and near somebody, trying to cover up their body odor.
Yep.
Can you imagine the body odor of a human being who's never used soap? Ever? Ever?
No, thank you.
Now, these are first-hand reports.
Yes.
This is not something I read on the Internet. This is from my friend, the contractor. This is from young men who are students at the university. By the way, it's the only university on the planet where you can get a PhD in the proper use of explosives.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That'll come in handy. okay. A PhD, wait. I can't let that go. A PhD in the proper use of explosives?
Yes, a PhD in explosives, yes. And the president of the university, the current president, as of about a year ago, is a Muslim. They recently, in all the restrooms at the University of Missouri, Rolla, Missouri, they installed these squirters next to the toilets. Uh-huh. They're very similar to what you have in your kitchen sink to squirt the dishes off.
Uh-huh.
So these men can squirt their bottoms off.
Isn't that special?
And women, too, of course.
Sure. Isn't that special?
No soap.
No soap. No soap.
Well,
okay.
The goal of Muslims is to duplicate as carefully as they can. That's what the Hadith is about. The Quran is the spoken is the words of Muhammad were dictated because he was illiterate. That's the Quran. The Hadith is a number of books that are written to document the life of Muhammad. The goal of a practicing Muslim is to duplicate the lifestyle of Muhammad. Muhammad liked cats. He didn't like dogs. It was about a year ago, maybe 14, 15 months ago, Doug, that the country of Iran made it illegal to transport a dog in your automobile or to have your dog in a public place like a public park. And that goes right back to the Hadith.
Right. And, anyone who doesn't like dogs, in my opinion, there's something wrong with them. Lady is offended. My studio dog is offended. She heard that and she's whimpering, actually growling, not whimpering. But you notice that the Hadith addresses cultural, not necessarily religious issues. And people kind of can't differentiate between that.
Well, in Islam, there is no differentiation.
True.
That doesn't exist.
Which is why we see Tlaib and what's her face in Congress, Rashida Tlaib, wearing a turban or what a headdress when in fact that's
a hijab.
Okay.
Hijab, right.
Yes. Now that is not a religious requirement. That is a cultural statement. That's kind of where I'm up at a period there, unless you disagree with that.
No, it is, but it's upon physical pain of physical punishment when these girls reach puberty and they become a young woman, and they're required to wear that head covering upon punishment, the corporal punishment, which they learn pretty quick. If I don't wear this thing, my parents are going to beat me. We have Muslims practicing female genital mutilation in this country. They're done in this country or shipped back to Pakistan, where they mutilate the little girl's genitals and bring them back. And that's with the parents think that's what needs to be done. These young women can never experience the normal pleasure that a woman should experience in the normal sense of having a sexual experience because they've been mutilated. It's no longer possible. That's a basic tenet of much of Islam, not all of Islam, but much of Islam.
Yes.
I should mention, I may have mentioned this on the show before, but when the military coup happened in Egypt a few years ago, we have to keep in mind these Egyptian generals, because of our policies, have spent a lot of time in the United States, where most of the United States does not smell like urine. Go to Cairo and tell me what you report. Most of Cairo smells like urine. Most of the Third World smells like urine. But anyway, these generals took over in a military coup. They went to the oldest, most respected university in the Muslim world, which is in Cairo.
Right.
And they ordered the imams to stop teaching that cannibalism was just dandy, which is part of Islam.
Wait a second. Say that again about cannibalism.
But Muslims practice cannibalism proudly and loudly. They think it's a great thing to eat body parts from their defeated enemies. The military coup in Egypt ordered the most respected Muslim university to stop teaching that as an acceptable practice of Islam.
Okay. I've got a lot of questions that surround that, I suppose.
They don't eat body parts for nutrition. They eat it as a ceremonial rite, showing their delight at defeating their enemy.
Okay. That was going to be one of my questions. It's, is that kind of like to the victor goes the spoils type thing? And okay. I guess, you know, I'm going to stop right there. Wow. Just thinking about that. It's crazy. Any preference on the part of the body that they might prefer?
I believe, don't quote me on this. Well, it will be quoted, obviously. The heart or the liver, I think, is what they focus on.
So you're looking at organ kind of organ right. meat. Okay. Which right. makes sense if you're going after the enemy. I get that. Okay. I get that. And, yeah, I think history is replete with such examples, I suspect, or at least we can cite some examples on that. But you know what I find interesting as you're talking about this? California right now, and I love your phrase about the communist Muslim,
socialist, communist Muslim Democrats. Right.
There you go. I find it interesting as we're talking about this. Millie Weaver came out with a 20 minute video within the last couple of days, where she was talking about the laws being passed in California, and one of the laws limits one's water consumption to, I think it's 17, I think it's like 70 gallons a day, which means a load of laundry. You can't do a load of laundry and take a shower at the, you know, in the same day. So I kind of look at this as you're talking. I'm thinking, man, you talk about Middle East, or not even Middle East, but you're talking about middle age standards, you know, the hygiene in California of the homeless, the stuff on the streets,
You mean feces on the streets?
Yeah. What'd I say? Stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that could be candy wrappers.
Yeah, true. Thanks for.
Well, it's Southern California is the issue, not all of California. You know, it's the desert. You got what, 20 million people living in the desert, and they wonder why they have a water shortage?
But you know, they wouldn't have a water shortage, in my view, if the damn progressives or the communists would allow the shipment of the. I mean, the policies are not right, and the water shortage is not. It's not necessary in Southern California with today's technology, but you look at these progressive, communists out there running our, establishing policy. I think that there's a lot to be, said about that, but you know, yeah.
Well, I'm not sure what specific policies would change, what's going on in water in Southern California. My limited knowledge is that there's more people than there is water. And of course, there was a dramatic decrease in rainfall, which I think is getting close back to normal. But it's What policies would be causing these issues?
It's okay. Now, I could be wrong, but it's my understanding that there's there have been efforts made to have water piped in. And also, in addition to that, the use of the rainwater, the refined, I'm not sure if refined is the right word, but treated rainwater into potable water. Okay, so there's limitations by the communists on that. I know there's fresh water up north being pumped into the ocean. I think a lot of that's runoff being pumped in the ocean when it could be diverted for potable use. Now, I can't cite chapter and verse right now. I have another notebook in my office, but some of the policies by the communists, in my view, in California, prohibit forward movement of these kind of, I don't want to say inventions, but these instruments to help others within the state. That's just my view. Okay. So, and I'm not really 100% up on all of it, but I do know that the restrictions are pretty oppressive. And that goes, you know, again, we're talking about California as well. The restrictions that we're seeing now being placed on people that don't have any health insurance, that people that are being provided with health insurance. The Millie Weaver 20-minute piece, if you haven't seen it, it's really worth seeing because the laws that are being enacted really are oppressing the people of California.
Who is Millie Weaver?
Millie Weaver from InfoWars. I don't know if she's part of InfoWars anymore or she's independent, but she's done a great job. She did a great job of showing what's coming in 2020 in terms of legislation. And that's where I got that shower laundry thing from. It's just amazing. But anyway, to the point rather than stray, the interesting parallels between the communist laws, legislation, the communist ideology and the Muslim ideology, very interesting parallels there or maybe unintended consequences. I don't know.
Well, the communists, of course, have a command and control economies once they take charge, and Muslims, when they take charge, it's basically a command-controlled economy as well. There's nuances of difference, of course. I'm always surprised at the Muslim men and women who are, in fact, Muslim communists, Hussein Obama being one, Valerie Jarrett being another. The two philosophies that would seem to be incompatible, as communists by definition are atheists, and of course Muslims are not atheists, but they do seem to somehow justify in their own brains becoming both a communist and a Muslim. I don't know if it's a matter of convenience or if they intend to stay that way the rest of their lives, but they do in fact become such. Interesting combination, Doug.
You know, I don't think it's an accident either. When you look at the communist open door policy, no borders in the United States, this mentality, and where are we getting, you know, who's coming in? Obviously, it's not limited to Latin America or Central America, South America. It's you've got other than Mexicans, you've got other than Latinos coming in. You've got a large third world, Middle East, North Africa population. But I don't think this is by accident. And the consequences, the Minneapolis, St. Paul area being turned into a Somalia haven, if you will. All of this, man. I mean, we're just crumbling from within, in my view. I don't know.
Well, the Muslim immigration needs to be halted and reversed. Men and women with a 70-75 IQ have very limited potential in this country to do any work without hands-on supervision. It simply can't happen. And the Muslim IQ, of course, does average in Pakistan, for example, being the worst. The average IQ in Pakistan is 70-75, which means there's as many people with a 50 IQ as there is with a 90 IQ. They can't perform in modern society without close supervision. Maybe they can learn to pack products in the styrofoam peanuts like we do in these sheltered workshops. There's nothing wrong with it, but in terms of having a fun, meaningful, productive life, they're very limited. And that's not going to change. It's not going to change. The industrialists in Germany, they were thinking that they would become much more profitable by bringing in workers from Turkey to work in their factories and run expensive, complex equipment. Well, it turned out not very many of them could. There was a very few, a tiny percentage that could because they had a high enough IQ to work with expensive, complex equipment. But most of them couldn't because of simply they have a low IQ, and low IQ can't be fixed. It's not a matter of education. Low IQ can't be fixed. So they become state dependent in the places they end up. They simply can't function in a modern society doing complex tasks that require at least a 100 or 110 IQ. They simply can't do it. We need to terminate Muslim immigration. It simply needs to happen to preserve our republic, to preserve our culture, to preserve our way of life. It needs to happen. It needs to happen soon. I hope that President Trump, after he's reelected in a few months, will work to terminate Muslim immigration. It really needs to happen, Doug.
You know, I totally agree with you, and I think that the unfettered immigration as we see it right now, especially of Muslims, because their ideology is in direct opposition to ours, to our Constitution, needs to be, we need to stop this. I mean, remember Operation Wetback, and people are going to say, oh, that's, I can't believe you said that. Well, that was the name of an operation to deport, deport individuals back, 70 years ago now. But how we are watering down or distilling, not distilling, how we are contaminating. Yeah, that's pretty offensive. How we're impacting our collective, population here is so far out of, it's so against our principles, John. I mean, it really is. It's, we're our own worst enemy. And you go back to the Immigration Act of 1965, where the doors open and for legal immigration. And every time that a Republican or every time we've been snookered with immigration promises and deportation policies, the right's always been victimized by the left's not playing by the rules or, you know, changing the rules, changing the goalposts. So, and what this, I think we talked about this last time too, about how this is affected and will affect the future voting and electorates, not even counting the voting fraud, but I don't know.
Our opposition, socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, have a plan. They have multiple plans, and they have a plan A, plan B, plan C. The one on me you touched on just a moment ago there, Doug, is changing the demographics. Long term, they plan on that being successful. In order for it to be successful, they have to have continued unfettered immigration, both legal and illegal. It's very, very difficult for a Caucasian Christian out of Europe to immigrate to the United States. It's very difficult. Two very dear friends of mine, in the mid-1980s, before the wall came down in what was Czechoslovakia then, which is now the Czech Republic, they were in their early to mid-20s, and they decided they wanted freedom and they wanted liberty. They did not want to spend their lives and raise a family under communism. And they got to a refugee camp in Italy. They basically escaped from Czechoslovakia. They spent a year going through all the paperwork and the hoops and this and that to become legal immigrants into the United States. A full year in a refugee camp in Italy. It was not easy. It was difficult. They left Czechoslovakia with four suitcases, one in each hand. And they came to this country with the clothes on their back and not much else. They now have a very nice home. It's paid for. They have a nice family business. They're raising two homeschooled children that are very bright and very well educated. and they're happy, well-adjusted, productive Americans. But it was not easy. It was not easy at all. Many South Americans or Mexicans especially who have gone through the process to become a legal immigrant to this country, they're a lot stronger against illegal immigration than most Caucasians are, most native-born Americans, because they know what they went through to become an American citizen, and they're very upset that people are coming here illegally and doing outside the law what took them so long to do the proper way. And you'll find that when you get down to the border states, that the people that support the president the most are the legal immigrants who came from Mexico and did it the right.
Sure. You know, there's a value. I mean, there's a value to obtaining citizenship that way, in that fashion. You've got a respect for your. I mean, the prize is citizenship when you do it that way. Whereas the prize for those people coming into this country illegally is not citizenship. It is complete dependency on a welfare state nation. It's the free health care. It's the benefits, the housing. It's all of that, the schooling, the education, which is really ripping from our infrastructure and really oppressing or really putting a lot of stress on our infrastructure. So that's what's happening. Whereas the way you described it, through this legal process, there's a prize. And boy, you cherish that a lot more, don't they? I mean, they cherish being here in this country as we, at least some Americans, cherish being Americans. Plus we know I'm sure they know more about the Constitution than the average leftist.
Oh, they do. They do. Absolutely. In fact, I met this couple. They had a monthly meeting at a public meeting room that they rented, what might be called a Patriot meeting, where they had guest speakers come in, and I was a guest speaker. That's how I met this couple in the summer of 1994. We became friends, and we're very good friends. Another friend of mine, he's from London. He's an American citizen, and his brother would like to become an American citizen, and his brother just couldn't get it done. Another English gentleman, healthy, educated, productive, can't figure out how to get it done. It's not easy. If you're Caucasian, a Christian from Europe, it's very difficult to become an American citizen. Very difficult.
You know, it brings me back to pre-1965, and of course everything changed in 1965 with the Immigration Act, but if you're a fan, folks, of old TV programs, there was a Dick Van Dyke show, again, pre-1965, where Dick Van Dyke and his wife, Mary Tyler Moore, had a house servant, guest, whatever, and knock on the door, and it was an immigration officer and deporting this person because she didn't go through the process in the manner prescribed. And there was a lot of fear, and there was a lot of attempted cooperation. Of course, it being a comedy, you get the idea, folks. But the bottom line is there was respect for the rule of law. There was respect for our culture at that time. Post-65, it's just, and especially of late, it's gone. So, what a difference half a century makes. And who's behind this push for, this invasion? It's the very people that you talk about, the communists, the Muslims, it's the very people.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, people are looking for answers too. We have an audience here that's listening to us. They're looking for answers. They're looking for solutions. You need support candidates. We got a major election coming up here in about 10 months. We need candidates at every level, whether it's a city council, a local school board, local sheriff, on up to U.S. congressional candidates, United States Senate, and of course the president. We need candidates at every level who support the Constitution of the United States, who support our basic foundational culture that we live in the way it should be, where we no longer have mentally ill people in positions of trust and responsibility. Homosexuals are mentally ill, in case you don't know it, Doug. A man who is sexually attracted to other men is mentally ill. You can't hardly talk about that publicly without getting smashed into the floor, but it's true.
I agree. And believe me, when you, this might be the last YouTube you'll ever, or last broadcast on YouTube you'll ever see, but you're exactly right. The diagnostic manual listing that behavior as a mental illness, it's historically accurate. You can shut us down and shut us up all you want, but it's not going to change the facts. Go ahead, John.
Well, absolutely. When you got limited resources, you focus your limited resources where you're going to get the most effect. There's a gentleman I've got to know recently. He teaches science at a private Christian high school. And I asked him, I said, well, does your school teach, your school system you work for, teach cursive writing? He says, well, of course we do. We want our students to be literate. I said, well, do you teach phonics? And he said, well, of course we do. We want our students to be able to read and write the English language properly at a good level. Public schools used to all teach cursive writing. Many no longer do. I don't know the percentage, not that it matters. But you're, this dialogue, what's changing our educational system, goes back to the 1930s. Now, Doug, you probably had the Dick and Jane readers when you were a child in school, right?
I'm sorry, the what readers?
Dick and Jane readers.
Yes.
Of course. That was the beginning of what's called a sight reading or a whole word reading, as opposed to teaching children phonics.
Right.
We still, people our age still were taught phonics because the teachers knew how to teach it. That's what they did. But by the late 50s, early 60s, the new teachers were no longer taught how to teach phonics, and it discontinued. That was the foundation of education and knowledge is two things, language skills and mathematics skills, Doug. If you don't have either or both, you're very limited in what you can achieve in modern society. If you don't have strong language skills, don't have strong mathematics skills, you're very limited in what you can do. And that's what we've got. Men and women under age 50 who have limited language skills, limited mathematics skills, and limited in what they can do to be productive in our society. Now, the private schools never drop the ball. They still teach cursive writing. They still teach phonics. The parents that are paying the tuition for these private schools demand excellence. And the schools are competitive. All these private schools compete for the students and the student dollars and tuitions, and they provide excellence. The public schools are not competing with anybody. If you walk in the door, you're going to get an education. That's it. So there's a lot of foundational things that need to be changed back the way they are, where phonics is taught the moment these children walk into kindergarten, as opposed to if it's taught at all, maybe fourth or fifth grade, which is by then, what's the point? It's too late.
Right.
To teach mathematics in the way you and I learned, in a simple fashion that works and has a track record of producing some of the best scientists on the planet, the way they were taught mathematics 30, 40, 50 years ago. If something's not broken, why would you try to fix it, Doug?
Oh, you know, the improvement, and I remember going back now in time, the first time I ever heard this, I don't know, maybe I was in eighth grade or whatever, but to accommodate others, grading on a curve. You know, remember that? You grade on a curve because that really began, in my view, what schools began to do to dumb down the requirements needed to pass something.
Well, I can expand on what you're saying.
Go ahead.
Why would you work hard for an A if that A is going to be drugged down by the lower performing students.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and the bright students, they figure this out pretty quick. That if I work really, really hard to get the best grade I can, that achievement's going to be downgraded because of the lower performing students. And that's a good way to disenfranchise and to take away incentive from the really bright, high-performing students, isn't it?
Yes. Now, stated differently, let's say you've got a D, or let's say you have a failing student, an F student, and, you know, it's a difficult subject. So maybe you only have one or two A's, and then the majority of B's, C's, some D's. Well, that F student, you know, because of the curve I mentioned, is not going to fail because of the mass of where most students land in the grade process. So that F will become a D or a C minus. You know, again, stated differently than the A coming down. So, it was kind of the prelude, I think, to, you know, the feel good stuff that we're seeing today, where even in sports, you know, we don't keep score because that's, it makes somebody feel bad. Well, it doesn't do anyone any good in my view, especially in academics as opposed to sports.
Life can be quite a shock because, American business is not great on a curve.
Yeah.
American business grades on excellence and productivity, and the more you produce, the better you do. Not preparing students for the real world is a massive mistake because the shock of finding out the reality that not everybody gets an award for just showing up, it would be quite a shock to the system. Talk to anybody who's got employees these days, and especially if they hire people under age 50. And it doesn't matter whether you're in Florida or Texas or California or Alaska or New York. It doesn't matter. South Dakota. You get the same response all over the country from people who do hiring. People don't want to work. The work ethic is simply almost non-existent. And that's a consequence of the things that you and I are discussing, Doug, where beginning in kindergarten, if you show up, you get an award for just showing up on the sports team. Where little girls are allowed to there's no tryouts for football in some states. The state of Washington, where my grandchildren are, if you want to be on the football team, the varsity football team, you will be issued a uniform, even if you're a girl, believe it or not. Young women have no business being on the football field. They don't. The question I ask is, what happens to the fallopian tubes of this young lady when they get hit 10, 20 times in one afternoon, the equivalent of low-speed car accidents?
Sure.
The delicate part of their body, which I routinely went through playing football, routinely, every afternoon. it's insane to have young women put on full pads and get on the football field with the young man. That's absolutely insane, Doug. But we're doing it. And the football coaches know better, but if they want to keep their job, they have to do it because it's state law. They have no choice.
You know, some might call us dinosaurs or, you know, we're discriminating. But I believe women built differently than men. I believe in putting them on a pedestal. I really do, in protecting them. That's me. Now, obviously, that's not what the enlightened man of today feels. You know, but then again, too, John, a lot of women they push for this. They said we want equality in everything, but you know, I don't think the normal woman wants what the enlightened man and women think that the women want. I'm not even sure if I made sense on that, but you know what I'm saying?
I believe want and desire have no relevance.
True.
Biology is what's relevant. We have many female athletes that are having, high school athletes, for example, that have been training for 4, 6, 8 years in their sport, it might be track, for example, only to find out that they can't possibly be a man who's grows his hair out and wears fingernail polish. They can't possibly beat this man at a track event. It's not going to happen. It simply isn't. But the authorities in charge of these school districts and the athletic commissions of these states are saying, oh, it's just fine. Men who have a mental illness and believe they're women can compete in athletic events against the girls and get the college scholarships that the girls have trained so hard to get themselves. That's upside down and backwards, Doug. It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
How do we fight this, John? Yeah. I mean, we've got to put our foot down and say, you know what? You guys are flipping nuts. Stop it. Just stop it. But how do we effectively fight this insanity in 2020 now? Without being shut down and shut up.
We Americans, I still have a lot of friends in contacts in the military, and there was these conferences of, say, the NATO countries, for example.
Right.
And our soldiers, the American soldiers, go to these conferences, and they're made fun of. They're made, look at this Marine, how's those girls doing in the Marine Corps, Sergeant? And our guys, they hang their head in shame that we're doing something that can't be done, which is to think that a woman the size of a healthy 12-year-old boy, 5'2", 100 pounds, can do what a full-grown man can do. It's not going to happen. Simply is not going to happen. They can't even do what a 12-year-old boy would do because they don't have the upper body strength. So, our men, when they go to these conferences with our allies, the NATO countries, they hang their heads in shame because of the political correctness, women being put into the Corps, women can serve with honor and integrity in the traditional areas of healthcare and the various services. That's where they do the best potential. That's where they have skill sets that are excellent, and the men can protect them. General Wainwright was in charge of Corregidor that was attacked and surrendered to the Japanese. He would not have surrendered to the Japanese if it wasn't for the 300 nurses he had in those caves. That's why he surrendered, to protect the women. General Wainwright would not have surrendered Corregidor if it wasn't for the 300 nurses he had. That's why he surrendered. And that was the right thing to do, to protect the women. And the men were treated brutally, absolutely brutally by the Japanese, but the women were treated politely and properly by the Japanese when they captured the female nurses. They weren't tortured or raped or anything, as best I can tell. And the men were treated brutally in what was called the Bataan Death March, of course.
Right. And I think we would do well in really knowing our history and studying history of our history as well as our previous history, or, you know, the history of, for example, the Roman Empire and that kind of thing. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. My guest, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Visit his website. Listen to his show every weekday. It's required listening. That's thelibertyman.com. By the way, John's going to be having he's going to be talking at a conference. What do I do with that? It's going to be, on the other side. It's going to be a conference on May 1st and 2nd of 2020 in Indianapolis. More on the other side. Stay right where you're at, the Hagmann Report, where truth can't be silenced.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Stand by. Doug and Joe will be back shortly.
And welcome back. This is the Hagman Report. The first day out of the gate, the first business day, getting down to business, by the way, on this Monday, January 6th, 2020. Don't say 2019. You're writing your checks 2019. I know you are. Those who write checks, right? Or have to date things. I know you're still doing it as 2020. Folks, I want to tell you, it is January 2020. The year 2020 shows a lot in science fiction, shows up a lot in science fiction. Did you know that? It does. A lot of people predicted that by now we'd be teleporting to work, you know, the Jetsons hovercraft and such, or living on Mars. And a lot of the predictions were outright incorrect. Well, the truth is we're always going to be getting elements of the future wrong, which is why we need to get life insurance right. That's where Policy Genius can help. Look, Policy Genius makes finding the right life insurance a breeze. In minutes, you can compare quotes from the top insurers to find your best price. You can save $1,500 or more a year by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. I used to be a captive agent, and I'll tell you what, I used to hate it when people compared companies. I did. But once you apply, Policy Genius team will handle all of the paperwork and red tape. You can actually replace your broker with Policy Genius. Again, I used to be a licensed captive agent, and back a lifetime ago, it seems. But let me tell you something. I would be fearful of Policy Genius, and I would be recommending, actually, as I do recommend my family and my friends, to PolicyGenius.com because it makes life insurance easy, but even more. They can also help you find the right home, auto insurance, and disability insurance. Now, here's what Policy Genius worked out. If your science fiction dreams for 2020, if they still haven't become science fact, don't be discouraged. Get life insurance. It takes just a few minutes to find your best price and apply at policygenius.com. That's policygenius.com. Policy Genius. We'll always get the future wrong, but better get life insurance right. I've seen this. And I've seen a number of people without life insurance. And let me tell you something. It's never a happy ending. That's policygenius.com. You'll thank me later. You really will. My guest, of course, is John Moore, the Liberty Man, John Moore. And I always love it when he comes on. I love to have conversations with him. You know, the thing about John Moore is he's got a very rich and colorful CV, his history, his background. From military to being a top homicide detective to being just an incredibly skilled investigator detective. So the way I look at it is two of us every Monday just taking the show as two detectives looking at current events and other things of importance, talking about this and talking about what we're seeing. Last hour we were talking about how about history and about historical examples in history, and how and women too, and how, in my view, and I'm kind of drifting here, but in my view, I believe we need to protect our women and revere our women. I tell my wife all the time, I think she's, you know, that she's better than me. And I say that I value my wife. I would never want to see her go off to fight a fire, you know, be a fireman. Can you imagine that? This is my preference now. Okay. I would worry about her in any position like that, or working in a factory carrying, you know, hundreds of pounds of whatever, or doing it. To me, women are special. Or I don't know. John, does that make sense to you that we should, or am I just too old fashioned and a curmudgeon?
Well, as many who would call you old fashioned, but we have many, many centuries of Western civilization where the men protect the women. And that's how I was raised. That's how you were raised.
Yeah.
I don't know how many young men are being raised that way now. I would hope that a large percentage are. Just a couple of weeks ago, I had an executive protection detail with a young woman. She was about the size of a good-sized 12-year-old boy. I mean, we were going into a situation where it was a high-crime area, and I had to escort her across some open areas in the street, city streets, and I told her, "You're going to stay on my left. I will hold your right hand with my left, and whenever I tell you to do or pull you in a certain direction, you go that direction with no resistance," so I could give her proper protection as we were in a high crime area. My first executive protection or bodyguard detail as an adult was in Vietnam. We had a young woman, the daughter of a Vietnamese sergeant who did housework for us. She did cleaning in our place where we were living. And she had a second job working in the kitchen at the Army installation a couple miles away. She would go to the bus stop before the sun came up to ride the bus out to the Army base to work in the kitchen. And these Vietnamese hoodlums would hold her up for her money, her lunch money, which would have been maybe 50 cents or a dollar. And she asked me if I would help her. So I said, sure. Now, I'm 6 feet tall. Barefoot, so I had my combat boots on and my U.S. Army issue helmet, which made me about 6'3". And I escorted her to her bus with my 1911 on my right hip, my M14 in my left hand. And guess what, Doug? The hoodlums just went away. And they didn't bother her anymore because they knew she had a protector. And that worked out really nice. I escorted her to the bus stop, I think, 3 mornings. And she never had any trouble after that. And her dad, the Vietnamese sergeant, was very grateful because he was off doing soldier stuff off someplace else and couldn't be there to protect his family. You mentioned before the break, I have a speaking engagement. Pastor Paul Bakley is putting this on.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up again. My apologies, I should have mentioned that. This will be May 1st and 2nd, 2020, Indianapolis. And you told me during the break, Pastor Paul Bakley, this is his event.
Right.
Talk to us.
Well, it's going to be at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Indianapolis. The speakers include Clyde Lewis. His show is called Ground Zero. Gil Broussard, I've met Gil. He does a lot of interesting work with using biblical research as to how it is involved with the violent earth changes. Pastor Larry and Sandy Ragland of the Solid Rock Church. And, of course, Heidi Beckley is going to be doing a presentation also titled The Green File. So that's there's a link on my website at thelibertyman.com where you can check out the details and register and get your tickets right there. It'll be a lot of fun.
You know, I'd love it. I'd love to be in the audience, and I'm serious about that, in the audience for that, because Pastor Paul, he does a great job. Heidi does a great job. And, of course, well, you know what? I might put that down on my calendar, because that sounds like a really great event. All right. And you go to thelibertyman.com. In fact, folks, you can go to HagmanReportLive.com. I'll say this. There will be a link to that event specific and, in addition to the link to the Liberty Man. So you can go right to the, page for that event. And there it is on your screen. So what are you going to be talking about? What are you going to be talking about?
Well, two things, the violent earth changes, which is my foundational work, and the interviews I've done with the Navy veterans who are in the classified briefing, plus what I continue to learn about the New Madrid seismic zone, which is very near where I am physically.
Right.
And the contact I've had with PEMA, people in SEMA and FEMA sources, giving me updates on the new branches of the New Madrid seismic zone are being found, the new seismic sensors being installed, and the concerns at very high levels that the New Madrid seismic zone is going to cut loose and split the country in two.
Should we be I don't want to say worried. Should we be looking at these changes with some sobriety, some level of sobriety?
Well, they're inevitable. The federal government, the opinion of the top people in the federal government is it is inevitable, and they've made and planned accordingly, setting up everything in Denver and Atlanta to take over from Washington, D.C. when it's underwater, splitting U.S. Northcom east-west at the Mississippi River, splitting all major resources east-west at the Mississippi River to have continuity of government. So the government's taking it seriously. They're spending literally hundreds of millions, possibly billions of dollars to prepare for this as an inevitable matter. While they're not telling the general public anything other than near the New Madrid seismic zone to be ready for a major earthquake, which is inevitable also, of course.
But I can hear it now, though, John. People are going to say, well, people have been saying this for years. You've been saying this for years. Everyone's expecting this. Nothing ever happens. You're a bunch of fear-mongering porn. Just sell your wares, your silver, your food items, your whatever it is. But nothing ever happens. You just want to make money.
Well,
your thoughts?
That is the expected response. I don't give dates. If I had a date I could rely on, I would. People inevitably get themselves in trouble when they give a date for something of that nature. So look at the evidence. The evidence is the federal government is preparing for this. If their top scientists didn't tell them it was inevitable, they wouldn't be spending this money. We make fun of how much money the government spends for $100 hammers and $500 toilet seats and so forth. But most of what the government does is for good reason, and they're doing this for good reason at the federal level and at the state level, both. We all hear about FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. There's also each of the 50 states has SEMA, the State Emergency Management Agency. And even at the lowest levels of SEMA in Missouri, I know that at the lowest levels, they're very aware of the violent earth changes that are coming. They simply don't talk about it publicly, Doug. That's an unfortunate circumstance, but it's not going to happen. They're not going to talk about it publicly. It's bad for business. It would cause disruptions and cause needless suffering ahead of time before people would be suffering anyway. And that's why they've chosen not to do that.
Ah, okay. Well, I can't wait for that event, May 1st and 2nd. Folks, by the way, libertyman.com, I'm going to be speaking at that. That's going to be this Paul Begley event. They fill up really quick. So,
it was standing room only. We had the one we had in Cincinnati last May was standing room only. Paul literally sent volunteers out to buy chairs.
Really? Wait a second. You were in Cincy last night? Cincinnati?
Yeah, last night. I had four women that volunteered to take over the healthcare for my wife those few days. And I was in Cincinnati. And we were hoping that nobody would call the fire marshal because he would have shut us down. We were way over capacity for that room.
Wow. It's always, you always give a good presentation, a great presentation, as well as Pastor Paul and Heidi. That's great. That's great news.
But let's talk about something people can do at the local level.
Please. People are going to start throwing stuff at us.
Okay. Our children need to be able to read, write, and speak the English language and to do mathematical calculations. Now, you want your school district to do that. Here's what you don't do. You don't walk into a school board meeting and try to convince them of anything. You don't do that. No, that's not what you do. You meet with school board members one-on-one outside the meeting, and you bring your evidence with you.
You beat on them. Oh, wait. Well, no, I'm sorry.
Well, that may not be the best tactic, but let them know something like cursive writing, for example. Read and write cursive writing.
Yep.
And just make up if you got a printer, you could print up a little sign. Every state in the union has a Springfield. I wasn't aware of that until fairly recently, but All the 50 states have a city named Springfield.
I didn't know that.
So you meet a good thing, Springfield school board member, and you bring a nice printed sign that says, Springfield High School students not allowed in the National Archives. They're prohibited. And there would be outrage. You know, if there was a sign prohibiting the Springfield High School students from going to the National Archives and reading the Declaration of Independence signed by John Hancock and Thomas Jefferson, there'd be outrage. But they don't need a sign to prevent people from going there because they can't read it anyway. High school students, the last 20 years, I don't know how long, since they're not taught cursive writing, they can't read cursive writing. They can't go into the National Archives and in Washington, D.C., right down the street from the White House, and read the Declaration of Independence. It may as well be Greek hieroglyphics, Egyptian hieroglyphics, for all intents and purposes. And so the private schools still teach cursive writing. You need to point that out to the school board members. The private schools still teach phonics from day one in kindergarten. The private schools and their parents demand excellence. And the parents of the public school children, they should be demanding excellence also. But you do this one-on-one with the school board members. And you need most of these school boards, they all have an odd number. It's going to be 5 or 7 or 9. You need to convince a simple majority to change policy, almost always.
Okay. I don't mean to interrupt or over-talk you. Just to recap, folks, you're asking for, well, you're saying, well, what can we do? John Moore, thelibertyman.com, is saying one thing that we can do. And in case you missed it but every state has a city named Springfield. And, by the way, during the break, we were talking that, the Declaration of Independence, of course, written in cursive, most people, many under 30 cannot read cursive, and they could not obviously read the Declaration of Independence. They wouldn't understand it because of the cursive writing, which brings us to this conversation here. So I just want to kind of give a catch up for people.
That's a good recap, Doug. But you meet one-on-one with school board members, mm-hmm. in a polite, business-like, maybe in a restaurant, for example, non-confrontational. You develop a relationship with these individuals. They're going to be your neighbors. They may be somebody you knew from from church, especially in a smaller town. And develop a relationship with these individuals and show the evidence and let them know politely and professionally that you would like to see students of your school district have the basic skills to make them successful in life, including cursive writing, including learning phonics, so they can learn how to figure out words and not be limited to a very small vocabulary because they weren't taught cursive, they weren't taught phonics, to learn mathematics in a traditional way that works. The same traditional mathematics systems that brought the world's best scientists earning Nobel Prizes in various scientific and engineering pursuits. That's what works. The old ways work. The new ways are broken and don't work. And meeting one-on-one with these school board members, you only need a simple majority, change policy, and run for school board yourself.
There you go.
Why not? Why not? Go for it.
But John, what do you do? Let's work it this way. I call up a member of the school board. And I say, I want to sit down with you. Let's say there's 7, okay, on my school board. And I call up 1. And maybe I've already had 2 or 3 positive conversations. I get to number 4. And number 4 is a flaming lunatic, leftist, liberal, I won't even say liberal, communist, insistent upon, everything that's bad for kids, in my view. How do you handle that?
Well, once you determine that, you just move on down the road.
Just move on. Okay.
If it's a lost cause, there's no sense. What's the old phrase? Beating him with a dead horse.
No, I was going to beat him with a phone book. Think of the old interrogation techniques, but I digress.
Well,
I know you did that. I know you did that.
We had field telephones.
Sorry.
No, go
ahead.
That's no, if it's somebody who's set in their position that they don't want to teach phonics, they don't want to teach cursive writing, that's simply, but they have to have an open mind to going back to what works, doing what the private schools did, still do. And that's a strong selling point. The acceptance rate in college from students who graduate from private high schools is dramatically higher than those that graduate from public schools. And there's a reason for that. They score higher on the SAT tests. They have a higher performance all around. But you cannot have a higher performance in academic matters if you don't have basic language skills. And that's what's not being taught in the public schools. They teach whole word or sight reading, where they're taught to recognize what certain words look like. Instead of phonics, where you learn on your own how to figure out words you've never seen before. If you're taught whole word reading method, you can't figure out words you've never seen before because you don't have the foundational basis to be able to do that.
Exactly.
And that is so. Now, most of these school board members probably went to school learning phonics. You're going to find some younger ones who didn't, and they're going to be they're going to be semi-literate themselves. About half the adults in this country, Doug, are either illiterate or semi-literate.
Yep.
Now, that's scary. I find that to be really, really scary, but that's where we are. And a semi-literate or illiterate population is much easier to control. And both parties know this. The Democrats know it. The Republicans know it. They both know that whoever convinces the most illiterate, semi-literate voters is going to win. That's an unfortunate fact of life, but it is a fact of life, Doug.
You know, exactly. And I can hear the argument out there. Well, and John, I'm addressing a certain segment of the listener and viewership where they'll say, well, you know what? You shouldn't be sending your children to public schools simply because you should be homeschooling your children. Okay. I understand that. I agree with folks. I agree with you on that. But maybe your grandchildren have no other alternative, or your children, based on your economic and whatever conditions. So, you know, in a perfect world, I believe all children would be homeschooled with the proper amount of socialization added to that. I get all that.
Well, they do that. The homeschool parents, they have plenty of activities for socialization. They have athletic events for their children. They have social events for their children. That's not lacking in most homeschool environments. That's certainly taken into account. But you're right, Doug. Not everybody can do that for any number of reasons. They may not simply be qualified to homeschool the children. I love my community. Most people love their hometowns. I want to see my hometown thrive and be and have a population that's happy and productive and has fun in life. And they're a lot more likely to do that if they're literate, as opposed to being illiterate and trapped in that paradigm of not enjoying reading, which is where they are.
Right.
Reading for a person who's semi-literate is not fun. It's not something they do for pleasure. They can't do it for pleasure. It's not possible. We're seeing a surge in what's called graphic novels. I call them comic books. But we have such a large segment of our population that is becoming semi-literate that we're seeing a whole new paradigm in terms of publication called graphic novels.
Yep.
And the great appeal, of course, is for people under age 40 who are semi-literate. That's where the great appeal is, because reading for them is not fun. And that's an unfortunate circumstance, but I remember when I was in Vietnam, there was a large publication on the street for graphic novels there, which I thought was unusual. I'd never seen such a thing for adults. I called them comic books. But a lot of the Vietnamese population is semi-literate, and it was a it was a big deal over there to have graphic novels for the adults in Vietnam. Now we're seeing it here for the same reason. It's simply the market meeting the demand. People still want to be entertained. They still want to have something called a book, so they have a graphic novel, which looks like a comic book to me, but people gravitate towards those because they can enjoy them and have what might be called pleasure reading because it's a graphic novel as opposed to a normal book.
Okay, so to what extent do you see Twitter, for example, that social networking, whether it's Twitter or Gab, limiting characters down to whatever it is, 240 or whatever. And this development of this whole special language, LOL, IDK, SMH, and on and on. I mean, does that play a role in all this?
Well, it does. I don't participate in Twitter myself. I don't have a Twitter account and have no intention of getting one. But I know these things exist, and I'm familiar with these things that you're discussing, like LLL. It's an unfortunate circumstance. I recall seeing some of the work done by my grandfather in grade school, the level of literacy that was done in 7th and 8th grade a century ago compared to what college students are doing now. It's a phenomenal difference in what was going on a century ago and what's going on now. Almost no Harvard graduates in 2020 can pass the Harvard entrance examination of a century ago.
Yes.
They can't.
I know that. And that's important for people to understand. Yeah.
They can't. Men and women with a PhD from Harvard can't pass the entrance examination for an 18-year-old to get into Harvard a century ago.
Yep.
They can't. And that Harvard, of course, being regarded as a world-class institution, but that's where we are in society. Now, a friend of mine, she worked in the administration for St. Louis University for a while with the medical school and for a while with the law school. They bring it, to get admitted to the St. Louis University Medical School, it's a really big deal. It is tough. They only get the best of the best. They bring these students in the first day of student orientation. They walk them into the library, and they say, ladies and gentlemen, this is a library. I've never seen one before.
Which is one of the reasons I'm not a fan of these electronic books, you know. You can have all kinds of books on your device, and I'm not a fan of that. But go ahead, continue.
Well, it's every student in most colleges and universities now, I remember when it first happened a while back, they're all issued a laptop. It's just part of student orientation is to get a laptop. My grandson, he's been the last one. He had maybe one or two semesters of college, university to finish. I was talking to him about his work, and he was on the football team, varsity football team, and they traveled on these long trips to various events. And I said, well, you can make use of that time and bring your books with you. And he says, Grandpa, we don't have any books.
No.
I thought, what? You don't have? No, they have to have... unless they've got an internet connection, Wi-Fi, they can't even read the assigned assignments because they just can't access them. So the long trips is downtime because there's no books to bring with them to read.
Yeah.
How sad is that?
Yeah. Sorry. I'm a fan of hard copy books. Although the convenience of having them on a drive or a hard drive or wherever, Kindle, whatever. I understand that.
I like both.
Yeah.
Right behind where I'm sitting, Doug, I've got Noah Webster's 1828 Dictionary, hardcover.
Right.
It's a wonderful book. Noah Webster's 1828 Dictionary.
Yep.
And I'm a big fan of both. I like ink on paper, especially for recent reference books, which are not optional, in my opinion. And when it comes to novels, I put it on my Kindle. It typically takes me a weekend to maybe read a 253-page novel. And it's just entertainment. when I'm done with it, it's gone. No big deal. But I'm a big fan of both. I like ink on paper books, and I like my Kindle. What I don't like is reading a book on a glowing screen on a laptop or a desktop. Those backlit screens are simply not good in your eyes for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, Eric the tech has actually got, because he's got so much screen time, he actually wears, what are they called? Screen glasses, I guess. Protect your eyes. They protect his eyes. But, yeah, you get googly-eyed after a while of looking at that. All right. John, let me turn back to Virginia for a second. Do you mind? All right. So, everyone is kind of up in arms about Virginia, and rightfully so. I was thinking about this. I believe that Northam and company, you know, the legislature is going full bore, you know, full commie, full communist against the American people. We know about Senate Bill 16, which was the which ultimately makes all semi automatics illegal. And we know about House Bill 67 that says, hey, if you're not going to enforce the laws as a police officer or sheriff or whatever, then gone is your job and gone is your health care and pensions and such. But there was one bill out of the three that I kind of glossed over before, and I want to get your take on this. It's Senate Bill 64 by Louise Lucas. She's the brains behind this piece of garbage, okay? And it's this, and give me your take on this. This is a bill relating to paramilitary activities. Now, okay, and the penalties prescribed. And here's what, in essence, what it says. The Code of Virginia is amended and reenacted to as follows. Now, this is scheduled for this is offered January 8th of 2020. It was written back in on November 21 of 2019. But here's what it delivers. Paramilitary activity is prohibited. A person is guilty, not shall be, but is guilty of unlawful paramilitary activity, punishable as a class 5 felony if he teaches or demonstrates to any other person the use, application, or making of any firearm, explosive, incendiary device, technique capable of causing injury or death to persons knowing or having reason to know or intending that such training will be employed for use in or in furtherance of a civil disorder or assemblies with one or more persons for the purpose of training with, participating with, or being instructed in the use of any firearm, and it goes on, or assemblies with one or more persons with the intent of intimidating any person or group of persons by drilling, parading, or marching with any firearm or explosive or combination thereof. And you'll be a felon for the rest of your life and have to pay big bucks. Okay, so my question is, what the heck? Looking at this, I mean, seriously, what are you serious? So, if I'm reading this right, karate classes out the door, gun classes out the door, assemblies to, I don't know, to promote your Second Amendment rights. Oh, you're a felon. Thoughts?
Well, there's some aspects of this which are kind of interesting. What it would make it illegal. Many athletic events begin with the local American Legion or VFW having a color guard march the colors out to the field, which has two men with rifles. That would be on the face of it illegal.
Yep.
Fourth of July parades have all kinds of men marching with rifles. That would be illegal. But more importantly, we've got more than 90 sheriffs and I think 20 or plus chiefs of police who, in fact, as we speak, on Monday, the sixth day of January, are forming militias in their counties and cities. On the face of it, that's illegal by this bill. These sheriffs and chiefs of police are getting their men and women volunteering for these militias. They're getting them organized, trained, equipped, organizing chain command. They're communications protocols, organizing these militias into battalions and companies and squads, with, like I said, like a chain with chain of command and training taking place. Everything that a militia does, that's happening right now in more than most of the counties in Virginia and many of the cities.
Right.
In direct contradiction to Senate Bill 64, which I have a copy of it here in front of me. It was pre-filed the 21st of November, and it just was offered. He offered for the Congress there at the Virginia legislature the day after tomorrow, Wednesday, on January the 8th. It will be in front of the legislature. There's a massive disconnect between the majority Democrats in the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansion in Virginia and the Constitution and the people of Virginia. That's obvious. That's clear on the face of it. As I said on your show recently, Doug, they're looking for pushback. They know their people. They knew when they proposed these legislations, these anti-gun legislations, they knew that the sheriffs would form militias and these chiefs of police would form militias. That's what they want. That's their goal, is to have a confrontation that will end up a violent confrontation. That's what they're looking for, and in fact, that's what they're going to get if they keep pushing it. Which brings up, I think you've interviewed Matt Bracken. I would love to interview him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But Matt Bracken almost had a crystal ball writing the book that he wrote, Enemies, Foreign and Domestic. It's like reading tomorrow's newspaper, Bracken's book.
Yes.
These men and women in the state capital of Richmond, they've put themselves at great risk. They have. I wish them no harm. But you may recall the song done by Janis Joplin, Freedom's Just Another Word for Nothing Left to Lose.
Yep.
You don't push men who have nothing left to lose. And there's plenty of men out there. And I know some. You know some. Combat veterans whose wife is dead, who are maybe just diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer themselves, but they still have strength. They still have vigor for maybe another 3 months of life.
Yep. And that's...
There's plenty of guys like that out there.
Yep.
All the time. And... You don't make somebody like that angry. You simply don't do it.
No. And
and they have freedom because nothing's left to lose.
That's right. And I've talked to my wife. I said, you know, if my doctor ever told me I had 3 months to live, oh boy. And that's not a threat. That's just a statement of fact. Oh boy. Yeah. So you're right. Now.
There's nothing more dangerous than a man who knows he's right and has no fear.
That's right. And it's a righteous fight, I might add.
It is. It's absolutely righteous. Dr. Jefferson's home is in Virginia. I've been there, Monticello. I've been to Monticello. I've been in his library.
Yes.
George Washington lived in Virginia. I've been to George Washington's home. And there is a history going back there that other states simply don't have.
Well, I think people are forgetting that history, or don't give a crap about it. At least in the communist faction in the state power base. But let me toss this out as kind of a closing possibility. You know, look, Northam's doubling down. You've got the Attorney General there, Herring, which I believe is the real villain in this, saying, well, you know, the sanctuary cities and counties, and they've got no teeth and no legal standing. And I refer people to Virginia's a Dillon's rule state, meaning that the state
whatever is decided on the state level is more powerful than the counties. And it's one of 39, I believe, Dillon's rule states. But that aside, here's what I'm kind of concerned with. You get all this, all this bravado ready to go. Hey, we're ready to fight. You do this, you're ready to fight. And they stay, and Northam and company take a step back and say, okay, all right, look, you know, we're sorry. What we're going to do instead is have mass registration, but no grandfathering of rifles.
They're past that point. They may have done that a year ago, but the fire they've lit is not going to be put out by that.
You don't think? Okay.
No, it's not going to be.
All right, because I'm just curious. They're going to take this to the mat, you think?
I think that's the goal. I really do. Yes.
Okay, then.
I hope I'm wrong.
I hope
we'll find out.
I hope
we don't have long to wait. We don't have long to wait.
No, we don't. And I'm going to be interested to see what happens on the 20th. And what you said earlier, I think it was during the first hour. There are individuals, or maybe it was a conversation I had with someone else before the show. There are Antifa-like groups that are infiltrating the Patriot movement in Virginia, and I suspect they're going to be destined to cause trouble for that event on the 20th, the rally. I'm just saying. Have you heard anything, definitive about this?
Nothing definitive, but we're dealing with people who have no scruples and no ethics, and they're capable of anything, right?
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at this in the bigger picture too, John. You got Iran popping, and by the way, Michael Moore, that seditious, traitorous POS, you know, PMing or private messaging the Ayatollah over in Iran, you know, saying, hey, you know, I'm on your side. I'll help you get Trump out and such. Anyway, that's another story. But you've got all this international stuff going, and then you got domestic unrest. If anything happens on the 20th, it's going to be blamed on the Walmart going, Bible holding, gun grabbing, smelly Americans, and it's the press is gonna.
Well, that's a given. Of course it will. You know, the people that caused problems in Virginia a year ago were not the people supporting our heritage of the Confederate States of America, which is a heritage in their history. People that caused the problems came in from out of town. The Antifa protesters. It would have been a quiet, peaceful event if it had not been for the Antifa protesters who showed up from out of town. The likelihood of a similar thing happening 2 weeks from today, I'd say, is very high. You and I talked about this, Doug, and I think you've made a decision to not be there in person,
but let
people report on the telephone.
Yep.
What your observations are, I think that's a smart thing to do. It may be the largest pro-gun rally in the history of the country. It has a lot of possibilities of that happening on one hand. On the other, there's also a strong possibility of people being there with bad intent to be violent and to cause violence. And I'd say it's a high likelihood at this point in time, Jeff, Doug.
You know, I look at 2020, I look at if the elections were held tomorrow, barring electronic or a voting fraud, I would see a second term for President Donald Trump. I cannot imagine the left, the communists, the Muslim, I can't imagine this core group of enemies within the United States accepting a Donald Trump second term. They won't be screaming at the sky only. They'll be, I just can't imagine that. So in preparation, in the run-up to that, you mentioned this weeks ago, 25th Amendment.
Well, we have a new issue, and that's attempting to get the world court to prosecute President Trump for war crimes for blowing up this general last week. That has as much chance of happening now as the 25th Amendment matter. I think they could pick up that ball and run with it. It's not going to happen. There's not going to be any world court prosecution of President Trump or anything. But the mainstream media will pick it up as if it's real.
That is, you know, I look at this and the visceral hatred for President Trump, the by the left, the I don't know. So I mean, this is, we're 304 days away from an election, a presidential election, and the general election. Man, I'll tell you something. The next 300 and some odd days are going to be really sketchy, I think, in terms of events. And we better question everything that happens. I think, I don't know about you, but if something happens, we better take two or three looks at it.
Well, we do. Obviously we do.
Yeah.
And this whole criminal prosecution in the world court for war crimes, it came out of nowhere. What President Trump did is a routine matter in war. Obama did it many times, by the way, using air power to take out terrorist leaders. Nothing wrong with that. That's what's supposed to happen when you're waging a war on terror. But they're going to pick that ball up and run with it, like I said a moment ago, and the mass media will pretend as if it's real, and that the president's going to be drug off in handcuffs to The Hague in Europe for trial as a criminal war crimes. It's not going to happen, though. It simply is not going to happen. But it will be treated as if it's a real event.
Mm. Wow. All right. In the remaining moments. Oh, by the way, Eric the Tech just sent this to me. Thank you, Eric. What we were talking about before, he sent me this. Facebook charges a member with hate for posting meme calling transgenderism a mental disorder. Seems to me we just had that conversation, including that was part of the mental disorder litany of things. But this article,
it's a true statement. It's a true statement in terms of language and science, both.
Yep.
A man who wants to become a woman is somebody who's suffering from a mental illness. A woman who wants to become a man is suffering from a mental illness. That's a scientifically, medically, language correct statement.
Well, exactly. And to see the reaction by Facebook, now that Facebook is a privately owned company, at least on the surface, therefore they've got the ability to censor whatever they want. But, I couldn't believe what Eric sent me. Your post it's written by Facebook. Your post goes against our community standards on hate speech and inferiority. And all this was a gender map with symbols, and, genders were circled, the male and female symbols, and the rest were, circled as mental disorders. And that, of course, is nothing but hate speech. So, you know, again, going against, millennia of science, and I don't know, brother.
Well, General Mike Flynn wrote a book. I got an autographed copy at a fundraiser for his legal defense. And the book is written in 2015, I believe, published in 2015. And he was still active duty in the U.S. Army. And he basically said in the book, How can you ever hope to fight or defeat an enemy if you're not even allowed to name your enemy? Of course, the enemy being Islam, and and that was where we are, and we I guess still largely are, because it's changing the protocols of the FBI not being allowed to name Islam as an enemy, changing the protocols of the U.S. Army and their training. It's a difficult thing; it takes time, but that's what caused his demise under the Obama administration, and hopefully brought him to the attention of the Trump administration to get him his job as national security advisor. I'm not sure where that stands. I met his new lawyer, Sydney, a brilliant woman, by the way. And I know there's supposed to be a sentencing coming up, and I don't know what the current status of that is. I know the judge denied bringing in some exculpatory evidence into the matter, which I think was a massive mistake. Do you have any updates on General Flynn yourself?
You know, I was just looking here as you were talking. I don't have any specific updates. I know that the sentencing is scheduled, anon, imminently, presently or soon. I don't have the specific dates, but it's, you mentioned about the, exculpatory evidence, being withheld or being, kind of pushed aside. What a travesty. And I think, on appeal, perhaps that might come into play.
These appellate judges will frequently do the right thing for the right reasons. And once the exculpatory evidence is before the court, I believe the whole thing will be resolved in General Flynn's favor.
Yeah, and knowing Sidney Powell, the author of the book "Licensed to Lie," Sidney Powell is a really high-powered attorney, and she really opened up an array of abuses by the federal government. Not abuses, I guess acts of criminal acts by the FBI and such. And just to see this. And by the way, John, I'm telling you right now, everything that happened in the 2016 run up to the 2016 election, all the Spygate stuff, it's got the imprimatur and the fingerprints of Obama, as well as Jarrett and stuff. Yeah.
Of course, people like Comey didn't get to where they were by being rogue. No, you don't do that. You don't get to be the head of the FBI by running off and doing things on your own without the chain of command knowing what you're doing and approving of it. You simply don't. So, of course, Obama was involved and Valerie Jarrett was involved. That's a given. This goes all the way to the top of the Obama administration. All these matters involving Spygate and Russiagate, whatever names you want to call it, the non-existent collusion with the Russians, of course it goes to the White House and to the Oval Office. That's a given. Any organization with a chain of command, such as the FBI, that's how they operate. They get their orders from the top down, approval from the top down. And it's foolish to believe anything else, Doug, and you and I both know that.
Precisely, my man. Well, in the remaining moments we have left, you've got, okay, so you, folks, Liberty Man, theLibertyMan.com, that's the website to go to. Listen to John's radio show every day, every weekday. It's right there. It's right there on your screen, folks. You can see it. Just go to theLibertyMan.com, proceed to that screen, and then, hey, you can press that button right like that, and that's Monday through Friday. Also, don't forget, John's going to be part of our regular Monday programming, both hours, tackling issues of a sensitive and current relevant nature every Monday for the foreseeable future until he gets started doing it. And then he's got a cruise coming up. You still have a cruise in February.
Well, we do. We stop promoting it. The closer you get to these cruises, the more expensive the cabins become. But if somebody wants to give me a phone call, my phone number is at my website. We'll talk about it. And there's still some cabins available, but they are expensive.
Okay. All right. And if you're not going to do a cruise, you don't like cruise ships, Pastor Paul Begley is having an event May 1st and 2nd. That's on LibertyMan.com's website. You're going to want to go to that MegaQuake 2020 Indianapolis May 1st and 2nd. There it is on your screen, and that's going to be something to see. And, boy, I'd like to be in the audience for that. Maybe I will, Eric and I. So, all right, my brother, we're at the end of the show. I want to say thank you very much.
It was fun. I look forward to next Monday.
All right, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. And we'll talk again.
Okay. Thank you, Doug.
All right. That was John Moore. And as we wrap this up, John Moore, LibertyMan.com. What do you think? It's a couple of investigators just talking, right? A couple of detectives just talking. Yeah, things are happening. Things are happening. I want to mention this. K-Cups Patriot Blend. Did you see that? Patriot Blend K-Cups and Revolution Blend K-Cups. I can't twist my arm that way. And, of course, don't forget Hagman Report. Don't forget Detective's Choice here. And I have a K-Cups box, just not down here. Three blends of coffee. Detective's Choice, which has got about 2 times the caffeine than a normal coffee. About, I'm not making any claims, about 2 times the coffee or caffeine. This comes in whole bean, as they all do, ground, you know, fully ground, as they all do, and K-Cups, as they all do. Detective's Choice, Patriot Blend, Revolution Blend. So, different levels of darkness. I believe the, if I'm not mistaken, the Revolution Blend is the less dark, or no, I'm sorry, let me see. Why did I know this? I should know this, right? The Patriot Blend is the lightest of the different coffees. And it's gourmet coffee. It's gourmet coffee. And proceeds go to support groups, entities that fight child trafficking. And I'll tell you something, folks. It's important to understand. There are fake groups out there. And I know you might say, well, you're just saying that. No, no, no. What I saw over the last several weeks, the fake groups popping up, you got to be kidding me. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. Any group that would, you got to be kidding me. And it's, some of you know who I'm talking about, what I'm talking about, right? It's sickening. The proceeds that are, come from this coffee go to Russ Dizdar for the spiritual side, the spiritual support, and Craig Sawyer for the practical support, because Craig Sawyer, boots on the ground, kicking some butt, taking names, and putting people in jail. Not sitting on the couch. Not sitting on the couch in your pajamas. It makes me angry. All right. One closing thing. I just want to express my appreciation to all of you who support this program. We had a great Patreon meeting last night. I just want to thank everyone who was a part of that. But I want to thank you who support this program. There were a couple of days during the last 2 weeks having off. I thought to myself, you know what? I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. And I'm not sure about coming back. And every time I felt that way, my wife would nudge me. And she said, look at the people who, look at this letter. Look at this email. Steve would call me up and he'd say, hey, how you doing? And I'd say, yeah, I don't know, brother. And he said, you know, I know how you feel, but look at, let me send you an email. Look at this. I hope that this platform has earned your support. I hope that we've earned your trust. I think we have, and I appreciate it. And I really do, folks. I really appreciate it. I can't tell you how much. I can't tell you how much you mean to me. And that's not a bunch of BS. It's not blowing smoke up your skirt. It is the purpose. You know, you provide the purpose. And we have a new mandate for 2020. We're part of the fight. We will be part of the fight. And we will be part of the change necessary to make America truly great again. And that's not just a slogan on a hat. And that's not Donald Trump's slogan only, but it's our responsibility, isn't it? As political conservatives, but as Bible-believing Christians, is it not our responsibility to us, to our families, and to our country? I believe it is. So the first program of the new year in the tank this evening. Just want to say thank you again, and may God bless each and every one of you until tomorrow. Good night.